Mm-hmm. Or something like that.
Is Monsanto the only bad guy?
No, they're not the bad guy. I mean, the group that I work for, our main issue is working on genetic engineering and pesticides and promoting sustainable agriculture, but Monsanto is up there in terms of what they've done in the past. They were responsible for Agent Orange in Vietnam, which is, you know, given cancer to thousands of people. They're responsible for developing PCBs, bovine growth hormone, and they sell about 90% of all genetically engineered seeds. So in terms of what we're working on, which is primarily genetic engineering, they are the main culprit. But there's lots of others out there.
They just be bought a C O M P a company that is D E L D E developing a T E R M Terminator G E gene.
Yeah. So about 6 years ago, this is when this first came to light, and the USDA, which is the United States Department of Agriculture, whom we all pay our tax dollars to every year, or some people do if they pay taxes, and they've developed this what's known as suicide seeds. And so what happens is a farmer plants his Terminator seed in the ground, it grows, it produces a crop, cotton, which is what they got the patent on, but it could be soybean or corn or any other food or fiber crop. And the next year, when they tried to save that seed and plant it again, basically the seed is dead. So it's a way for them to get farmers to buy seeds every year. And of course, you know, farmers have been saving seeds for 10,000 years. That's why we're all alive. That's why we all are able to eat the variety of foods that we are right now. So it's a big issue of concern. And lots of other companies are doing similar things. But basically, it's a way to keep farmers on the treadmill where they have to buy seeds every year, they have to buy pesticides from a certain company, and it's going to basically turn them all into serfs, or what's known as bio-serfs.
But are not GM genetically modified organisms, SU, supposed to FEE feed the world?
Well, this is what the biotech industry has been saying. And they're spending about $50 million a year to convince us that this is the real reason why Monsanto and all these other biotech companies are developing genetically engineered seeds. And if you look in newspapers, you look in magazines, you see these nice glossy ads, and they have a picture of a young Asian woman with her daughter, and she's feeding her a bowl of rice, and the caption underneath, which is paid for by the biotech industry, says, "These are the foods that are going to feed the world." And what's interesting is, of the genetically engineered crops that we have right now, there's only two varieties. One, which are herbicide tolerance crops, which are basically engineered so you can spray your entire field with a pesticide and everything will die except for that crop. So it's a way for biotech companies like Monsanto to sell more of their herbicides. And about 70% of all genetically engineered seeds are engineered to resist Roundup. You go into any hardware store and you can see it on the shelves. It's the most popular chemical in the world. And the second type are plants that are engineered to produce an actual pesticide in the plant. So they're registered at the EPA, the Environmental Protection Agency, as a specific pesticide. And so these two varieties are on the shelf right now. All they're being fed to are livestock, right? The 90% of them being fed to animals, cows, pigs, sheep, chickens, other animals, so that, you know, Americans can eat more and more meat. And if you look at hunger in the world right now, we have 800 million people who are hungry. And according to the United Nations, we produce about 50% more food than we need as a race, right? And this ends up rotting in warehouses in the U.S., in countries like India that has a third of the world's poor, and a whole bunch of other places. So the problem is not food production, it's food distribution. It's addressing the social and economic problems that don't enable people to have land, don't enable people to have the money that they need. And this is just a convenient PR front for the biotech industry to put on and say, look, don't you want to feed all the hungry people? If you're opposing genetically engineered foods, then you're going to stop all these people in Africa and Latin America and Asia from being able to reap the benefits of this technology. And that's not the case at all. You know, we look at the people who are hungry, 80% of them come from countries that export food. And the best example of how ridiculous the global trade system is in 1984. I don't know if you remember, there was a big famine in Ethiopia, and all the rock stars got out and they sang sappy songs, and, you know, they raised money. You know, we are the world, remember that? And at the same time that they were, you know, trying to raise money for all these thousands of people that were starving in Africa, there were barges leaving from Ethiopia filled with livestock feed to bring over to Europe to feed to cows and other animals there, and cut flowers to sell in supermarkets. So the issue is not, do we have enough food? The issue is, how can we design a global food system that really empowers the people who most need to grow their own food and enables them to have access to food? And genetically engineered foods are not the solution to that.
But P-L-E-T, let us P-L play devil's advocate. Let us play dumb. If they do... If they do think genetically modified foods will feed the hungry, why P U put T E R Terminator terminating stuff into the seeds. All J U just give G GM seeds GMO seeds just give GMO seeds W I without the terminating part of them to the P, to the poor?
Right, and that's a good question. Beyond just the terminator aspect of it, you know, there are a lot of other concerns that we have. Like, if you look at what scientists are doing with genetic engineering, basically you have scissors and glue, and so you can take a gene from any organism, you know, a fungus, a plant, a bacteria, an animal, or even a human, and you can cut it from that genome, which is, you know, all of the genetic information of that organism, and you can take it and insert it into another organism. So, for example, we have salmon with human genes in them. We have broccoli with rat genes in them. I mean, and all these other crazy combinations, it sounds like a bad science fiction movie, but it's on your dinner plate. So when scientists do this, and they've only been doing this for a very short period of time when you look at how long we've been growing crops for. The first genetically engineered crops were planted in about 1996. The first genetic engineering took place in 1973 at Stanford, and that was between bacteria. But in terms of what we've been eating, it's been about 7 years. And we're concerned that we really don't know enough about how different genes work together when we push them like this. So we take a gene from a bacteria and we put it in a corn plant. We don't really know what the long-term effects of this are going to be. And if you look at the way plants were traditionally bred, you've only got very closely related organisms breeding together, right? You can grow different varieties of corn, but you can't take a gene from a chicken and put it into a potato, which is what scientists are doing right now. So it's a powerful technology, and we need to move slowly.
Why? You. Yum.
Yeah, I mean, the potato might taste good, you know, if you, you know, if you want that.
R-E-N, French fry chicken. French fry chicken.
Well, I mean, that's good. I mean, I think that would be a good idea. We'd have to call it freedom fried chicken.
But be a back to my question to my question. If we play dumb and we say that their intention really is to feed the hungry,
right,
and then why not just give the genetically modified seeds to the poor without the terminating aspect to it?
Well, I mean, there are a lot of health concerns. They could introduce new allergens. We don't know.
Well, he's saying, let's like assume that what they're saying is true.
Right, that they really do want to feed everybody. Right, right.
So how would it follow if they really want to feed everybody? How would their logic go?
Oh, gotcha. Well, yeah, so there hasn't been any evidence that there's higher yields. But let's just say if I'm the Monsanto executive and I'm talking about how this technology is going to feed the world, or basically what they're saying is we're going to engineer these plants that can grow in very adverse conditions. So places where there's high salinity, you know, there's a lot of salt in the soil and it's difficult to grow crops. Places where there's a drought. Places where, you know, something has happened that's made it very difficult to grow crops. So the idea is we'll be able to make all of these genetically engineered foods that can grow in these conditions.
So, and then why wouldn't they then allow the farmers to save those great seeds that are, why would they have them so that they terminate at the end of them if they really want to feed the poor?
Because they want to make lots of money. I mean,
but see, that's what Frank is saying. That's where their logic falls apart.
Right.
Because if they're saying that they're doing it to feed the poor, and then it doesn't make sense that they're making it terminate.
Yeah, exactly.
Because if they want to feed the poor, and then they'd give these great seeds, they'd sell them, but and then that would be that.
Yeah. About control. I mean, that's really what it's about. And using the image of hungry people, it's what's known as poor washing. You know, it's like companies do greenwashing when they want to talk about how environmentally friendly they are. And the term poor washing has been used to talk about, use the image of the starving African kid. Everyone's heart bleeds when they see that, right? And so that's the sort of thinking behind that.
That they are trying to LFORC. They're trying to force Africa to accept genetically modified food if they want to get the medicines for AIDS.
Yeah, that was a big story last year. What happened is several countries in Africa refused food aid from the United States because they were concerned that it contained genetically modified organisms. And all the countries finally gave in to the U.S. except for one country, Zambia. And what traditionally happens when there's some kind of natural disaster, a typhoon or a drought, is most countries, when they want to give aid to another country that's had something bad happen to it, they'll give them money. Mm. Because when you give a country money, that enables it to buy food off farmers in their country that have a surplus, or buy it from the neighboring region. What the United States does, instead of giving countries money, is they give them food aid, right? Because they've got all this genetically modified corn that no one else wants. And so basically it's a convenient way for them to dump this untested stuff on the people of the developing world. And the argument goes, well, it's either you're going to die or you're going to accept the GMOs. And it's, what's interesting in Zambia is that Zambia refused genetically modified corn from the United States. And what they were able to do with the help of a lot of non-governmental organizations, primarily in Europe and around, and also in Africa, was to buy up surplus cassava from the north of the country, because the south had a drought, but the north of the country didn't have this drought and had an excess of food, and they were basically able to redistribute the food, which is what we're trying to do when we solve hunger, right? There's always going to be enough food there. It's simply shifting it to the right place. And it was great because Zambia stood up to the United States. They weren't going to be strong-armed, and they said, we're going to be able to find our own solution to this problem. And not a single person ended up starving to death in Zambia. So it really turned out very well. But what happened about a month ago was Congress passed a non-binding resolution which basically said, if you're an African country and you don't accept GMOs, we're not going to give you any aid for HIV. Like, we're going to give preference to the countries that accept genetically modified organisms. And if not, too bad.
Where is the FEED feeding the W world? Where is that feeding the world that they're talking about wanting to do in those kinds of in those examples? You can't see them trying to feed the world when you say something like that. It is about PROF, profit. And IHE, and I heard on LU, on Lover Alternative News, this WE this week, they are giving, they are not even SE sending GMOs CO corn meal, but GMO C corn in instead HO, hoping it will contaminate the crops. We had heard that normally they would send the meal, but if they send the corn, that it will have a better chance of contaminating.
Yeah, I mean, what happened was after they initially refused it, and you know, the U.S. freaked out, and what they said is at the minimum, just mill it, you know, because if you mill it, then there's no way that the seed could be planted, and they wouldn't even do that. And the argument goes, well, the reason that these the reason that the African countries are rejecting this technology is because they don't think it's safe, and the U.S. doesn't have any kind of regulatory system in place to really look out for what's going to happen in terms of effects on the environment and human health. But the argument of the U.S. was, the reason that African countries don't want this stuff is because if they grow GMOs, they're not going to be able to sell it to Europe, and they're going to lose their market. And so that's why they wouldn't mill it, because they do want to contaminate the food supply, because the idea is, once everything's saturated with GMOs, too bad, right? What are you going to do? You know, you just have to kind of put your hands up and accept it.
And I was. I was thinking if before, if everything is genetically modified, how would they P R O profit from that?
Well, they've already thought of this.
Yes.
And what happens is when a farmer buys GMOs, you have to sign a contract, right? And specifically what the contract says is, first of all, you can't save the seeds, so you have to buy the seeds from Monsanto again the next year. And it also says that if seeds are discovered on your land and you haven't paid for them, that you owe a fee to that biotech company, Monsanto. And Monsanto has sued hundreds of farmers around this country, basically because the genes from the genetically modified crops have ended up on their land. Mm-hmm. So if the wind blows and your neighbor's growing genetically modified crops, it comes on your land. If a bird picks up a seed, if a bird carries some of the pollen, all these various mechanisms by which the genes are able to come over to your field and to insert themselves into your crop, and Monsanto will go ahead and sue you. They'll say that their genetic property is on your land and therefore you have to pay them a fee. So if everything becomes contaminated, they're going to be able to get money from everyone.
They will see O-N-T control the food supply.
Yeah. I mean, that's their ultimate goal. They talk about feeding the hungry and cleaning up the environment and saving all the poor, you know, family farmers from being driven off their land. But ultimately, it's about control. Mm-hmm. Because once you own the patents to the world's food supply, then you're able to extract money from them and you're able to control the seed market and the entire food chain.
S. So, how did they S. N. U. See, sneak this in.
Well, they did it very, they actually was very sneaky how they did it. And what happened was, in 1992, a guy named Dan Quayle, who maybe you remember was George the First's vice president. People didn't think he ever did anything, but he did do one thing, at least that we know.
Maybe he, S-P-E spelled genetically modified. Maybe he spelled genetically modified P-O. P.O. Potato?
Yeah, exactly. Dan Quayle was able to push through regulations that exempted GMOs from any, you know, being subjected to any kind of scrutiny, and yeah, he couldn't spell potato. You know, it's kind of ironic. And basically what they decided was, GMOs are the same as all the other crops we've been growing for thousands and thousands of years, and so therefore, we don't have to rigorously test them. We don't have to look to see what happens when you or I or animals eat these foods over a short or long period of time. We don't have to look to see what happens to the environment when we release these on as large a scale as we are doing right now. And basically, the idea is these are exactly the same, and there's no reason to test them. And it got pushed through on January 31st, 2002, which is known as the slowest news day of the year. You know, no one's covering any stories, and it just got slipped underneath the radar screen of a lot of people. And that's the basis that we have right now, and that's the reason that all these countries are opposing genetic engineering, because we don't have a regulatory system that is looking out for the concerns of consumers, looking out for farmers, looking out for anyone other than the biotech industry. So that's how they snuck it in there. And we also have the issue of what's known as a revolving door, and this happens with a lot of industries, you know, the logging industry, the mining industry, where you have someone who works for a particular corporation and then ends up being a government regulator. I mean, look at the Bush administration right now. Everyone in Washington, D.C. was previously working for a corporation, and you work for the government, you're able to craft very, very industry-friendly rules on the environment or on genetically modified foods, and then you come back through the revolving door, and of course you end up getting a great job for that company later on because you've been able to make the millions of dollars in profits by not having them really account for what they're producing.
But how did they get GMOs in to the STO stores so fast?
Well, what happened is because there were no regulations, there was also no system of segregation. So there was nothing to prevent the fact that you're growing genetically engineered organisms entering the food supply. So because there was no labeling required on these foods, basically what happened was all this food gets mixed together. So let's say there's 20 farmers in an area, and only one the first year was probably growing genetically modified corn. Well, when they all take their grain to the corn silo, that's all mixed together. There's no system in place to make sure that it's segregated, to make sure that people who want to choose to not eat genetically modified organisms are given that choice. And so as a result, it just ended up getting in the food supply. And if you look at the main four crops that are genetically engineered right now, you got corn, cotton, soybean, and canola. And if you go to, you know, your local supermarket or you go to your local health food store and it's not organic, and you start reading these ingredient labels, one of those four ingredients is most likely going to be in the product that you buy. So, like, corn syrup is in all, like, soda pop. Cottonseed oil is in salad dressing and cookies and crackers, and, like, soy lecithin and other soy derivatives are in almost everything. And although you look at consumer polls, over 90% of people want GMOs labeled, and most of them want them labeled so they can go to the store and say, ooh, this has got genetically modified ingredients, I'm going to pick the one that doesn't. And industry has resisted that. The food industry has said that consumers don't need to know this information because, of course, it gets back to this issue of these foods being the same as everything else. And so that's how it happened. It was very, very, very sneaky how they did it. And only, you know, in the last 2 or 3 years have people started to become made aware of this issue. And it's interesting because if you do look at the propaganda coming out from this industry, right, these are going to protect the environment. These are going to feed all the hungry people. You'd think that they'd want to advertise it, right? I mean, if you've got such a good product, stick it on the label, you know? But of course, they know full well that people are going to be a bit skeptical about these claims and are not going to want to eat untested foods.
In fact, they say W-E, well, it is 2 L-A. It's too late. That's what he said. In fact, now they're saying, well, it's too late because it's all mixed up. And
right, right. Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's too late. And obviously one of the things that we do at Organic Consumers Association is try to organize people on this issue. And if you look what happened in Europe about 5 years ago, when European consumers started hearing about genetically modified organisms, millions of them called up supermarkets and food companies. They faxed them. They emailed them. They went to talk to their local supermarket manager about this issue. And basically, the sheer number of people that voiced their outrage at being subjected to this technology was enough to get all the food companies to stop buying GMOs. And what happened was as soon as one company announced that they weren't going to use these ingredients, all the others followed suit almost instantly because they realized that that one company would have a marketing advantage. So I think in this country, too, we're starting to see more and more people learn about this technology. And I don't think it's too late. I think we have a lot of work to do to reverse what's happened in the last 7 years. But I think if we really do all stand up and demand that we want a GMO-free food system, we'll be able to turn the tide. But we've got to be careful because if you look at those four crops that I mentioned, every other food and fiber crop is being genetically engineered. It's not being put on the market yet, but places like UC Berkeley up the road, places like UC Davis, and thousands of other universities around the country, people are in their biotech labs and they're splicing genes, and their intent is to have everything genetically engineered. And it's not just plants, it's fish. We're seeing the first genetically engineered fish being sent to approval.
Is F funding the universities?
Well, what's happened in the last several decades is that less and less public money has been going into the university, and more private money has been going into the university system. And UC Berkeley is a fantastic example of how a university's research agenda has been completely co-opted by a private company. Several years ago, UC Berkeley signed a contract with a company called Novartis, which is a European company, and is now recently merged with another company, AstraZeneca, to be called Syngenta. They are the biggest agrochemical company in the world. That means they are the biggest seller of pesticides right now that we have. And they signed a $25 million agreement with UC Berkeley, specifically to fund more students to take part in experiments on genetic engineering and industrial agriculture. They say that their intent is not to have a certain bias between one technology and another, but of course it is. Why would they be giving $25 million if they did not expect to be able to reap the benefits of this technology? And they also get the first rights to any patents developed at the university. They have their own company members sitting on the steering committees, which decide which grants are given out to certain students. So Berkeley is a great example of industry takeover of our public research system.
Isn't that B A bad S C science?
It's terrible science. And it's not only bad because it diverts the track of research to only one direction, it's also bad because at Berkeley, professors who have been speaking out against this contract with Novartis have come under a lot of criticism. There's a really good example. One of the professors right now, a guy named Ignacio Chapella, who has been at the university for several years, and he discovered several years ago that genetically engineered corn had contaminated the local varieties of corn down in Mexico. And this was a story that was publicized around the world. It was of great concern because corn is where in Mexico corn is where that crop originated, and it's very important because there's hundreds and thousands of different species and different varieties of corn grown there. And after he published his findings, he was criticized by many of the people at the university, saying that he was practicing bad science and he didn't have the evidence. And right now, he has been denied his application for tenure at the university. So the idea is push all of the people out that are speaking out against these kind of proposals, and eventually you'll have a university system which is not conducting research for the public good, but which is basically, you know, whoring itself to private industry.
It R E. It reminds me of when in the 50s they were T E. telling us F-R-O, frozen foods is, frozen food is better than fresh food. When they were when they were telling us, INFA, infant formula is better than mother's milk.
I mean, these are the same companies that have been telling us for the last 50 years that pesticides are good for you. You know, so yeah, we should be skeptical of their claims.
They are STI. They are still PU pushing it in the THI third world about formula being better than mother's milk.
Yeah, and a lot of these other technologies too. It's like when, you know, when people here don't want them, they just run overseas, and that's happened with a lot of banned pesticides. Things like DDT that we banned many decades ago. All these companies go sell them in other countries where there's not strict regulations and, you know, farmers are using them and poisoning themselves.
S. So, why are we F falling for it?
Well, I think there's several reasons. Primarily, I think because the media does a terrible job in presenting balanced information to people.
Why?
I mean, if you look, you know, if you look at, especially the way science issues are reported, there's what's known as the "oh wow" syndrome, right? You look at the front page of the science section or whatever section is reporting on health or agriculture or other food issues, and you hear about a miracle drug, right? They've discovered the miracle drug that's going to cure cancer, right? And there's a big feature. And of course, when the product never makes it to market because it was proven unsafe, there's no big feature story letting people know about that. So we have a tendency to get really excited about new technologies, promote them.
Why is that the follow-up story doesn't appear?
I mean, I think it's because it's exciting. You know, it sells newspapers, I think. And people, I think, sometimes want to be given a false sense of hope. But it's the same thing as when they print something wrong in the paper, right? You know, you read at the very bottom of the page, you know, oh, by the way, we had this name wrong and we had that name wrong. And it's the same analogy for when it comes to new technology. So I think there's probably a lot of pressure from industry. And in terms of a lot of media publications, I think, are getting a lot of money in advertising from the same companies that they're writing stories about. So I think that's one of the main reasons.
Is that BAD? Is that bad? J, journalism? Is that bad journalism?
Yeah, I think it is bad journalism because you're influenced by the fact that you're getting a good proportion of your income from companies. I mean, I think, you know, maybe the reality is you need to have ads in your magazine, but if the people who are sponsoring you are influencing the way you're writing your stories, then I think it's terrible. And it's happening a lot. I mean, you just open, you know, and a good example is like Newsweek or Time or one of those other crappy news magazines. You open it up, you know, and there is a story about the miracle drug, and then you turn the page, and there's the ad for the miracle drug. Mm. You know, so not a good scene.
Hey. F. U. T. Future is always H O H I high T E tech. Hey, the future is always high tech. F U future is always C O R P corporate.
It's true. And, you know, one of the criticisms that people get is these people are Luddites, these people are anti-technology. And that's not the case at all. You know, there's a lot of good technology that's being developed which has the potential to benefit people. But we need to go slow, and what we've always said is we need the precautionary principle, which is when something's coming out on the market, it's not up to us to prove that it's dangerous. It's up for the company to prove that it's safe.
Where? When did we forget that principle?
I think we probably forgot that principle about 50 years ago. 'Cause up until then, we didn't have a large amount, or probably I'd say pre-World War II, we didn't have a lot of industrial chemicals, we didn't have all the pesticides, we didn't have all the pharmaceutical drugs that we have now, we didn't have as many of the factories that we have right now producing these tremendous amounts of toxins and pollutants that are getting in our food and getting in our air and getting in our water. So I think it's been relatively recent that we've, you know, abandoned the precautionary principle and gone for this science is better, you know, we need to just move forward, and if something bad happens, we'll just have to worry about it later because we can't slow down because we've got to do all these wonderful things.
I think they are in a R you in a rush because they know the OI the oil is running out.
I think you could be right.
They want to make as much money as they can in the NE next 25 years.
Yeah, definitely. And if the technology fails, as I said before, they're going to have their patented genes all over the place, and they can just go around, you know, collecting money from everyone. And of course, what's interesting, and you know, it's the same as nuclear power and all the other technologies that we have. None of these companies that are producing these seeds have any kind of liability insurance, right? So if something goes wrong, too bad. We're all going to be stuck paying the tab, and you see that right now. Under the Bush administration, you know, we have all these Superfund sites, right? These toxic chemical dumps that are all over the country. There's thousands of them, and the companies who have produced, you know, have produced these horrible places are not responsible for cleaning them up. Basically, it's up to you and I, and you know, the other unfortunate people who, you know, have to pay taxes. So it's going to be the same with this technology. It's going to ultimately prove to be unsafe, and there's going to be some harm and some costs, and these companies will run off scot-free, make lots of money, and we'll be stuck with the bill.
H-A-H-S-E-E seems like the V-A-S basic problem is the C. Corporations are U. L. Rule.
It's the root of all evil.
It will not C H A change until we D E A deal with the corporations.
Yeah, it's true. It's just, you know, all the problems that we have, they go back to the fact that the corporations have all the power. They give millions of dollars to politicians who then make rules which favor them only and, you know, cause our environment and our public health these problems. So yeah, it's the same problem. And we need to tackle it. I mean, one of the things we need to do is to, you know, basically get rid of any, you know, any private companies being able to give money to politicians. I mean, mm-hmm. I think that's one of the, you know, the primary causes of the issues that we have in our society right now.
The and L I limit their profit.
Yeah, definitely. And they don't pay taxes either. You know, that's the other problem. They get government handouts and subsidies, but none of them ever pay enough taxes.
And M A make them are responsible. Then their G, their, was it their? Yeah. B, O, A, board of directors, make their board of directors responsible. P, personally. That then they would think twice.
Send them all to jail.
See? Oh. Corporations, C-O-R, Corey, is W-O-R, working on, no, working A, F, E, a festival on July 4th. Yeah, some kind of a food festival or something on July 4th.
In El Cerrito.
Yes.
Yeah.
I and his boss got genetically modified food, samples of genetically modified food to give out at the festival.
Excellent.
Yeah, but I mean, it's like they're doing all this work at the store to try to clean up the genetically modified stuff out of this mm-hmm. health store, and then when they go to do this fair, he's just like, "Well, I want to get a bunch of free samples from these companies." Well, did these free? But does this company have genetically modified stuff? Oh, yeah, right.
I mean, that's a problem. It's everywhere, you know? And so people are going to a place like the unnamed health food store around the corner here, you know, and they think they're buying healthy food, and a lot of it's been genetically modified. And because there's no labels, people have no clue, you know, and that's a problem.
Is there any way to be S-U sure that you're not getting genetically modified stuff?
You can, well, you can look at the ingredient label, and if it doesn't have one of the four crops, corn, cotton, soybean, and canola, then it's not going to be genetically modified. Or if you buy organic, for now, you're going to be certain that it's going to be free of GMOs. But one of the problems is the issue of contamination, and as we have more and more crops genetically engineered, it's going to be more difficult to segregate them. When we start having genetically engineered tomatoes and genetically engineered potatoes and lettuce and carrots and grapes and all the other things that, scientists are working on, there's no way to keep organic and genetically engineered agriculture separate. There's just no way to do it. So one of the things we're trying to do is, you know, our stance has been for a moratorium on genetically engineered ingredients or genetically engineered crops. We don't think they should be planted because it strips organic farmers of their right to sell organic food organically. And if you say, well, okay, you know, we can accept a little bit of contamination. We can have 1% this year. Well, what happens next year when you have 2%? Do you say that 2% contamination is okay, and then 5% and 10% and 20%? And, you know, like Frank was saying, you know, the idea is to just have everything contaminated, and then, you know, there's no way to escape it. So we think the reason that you can oppose genetically engineered foods is because we have other alternatives, and organic food is readily available. Thousands of farmers are growing organic food, and it's the way forward.
W-H-I, which is why they want to get rid of organic.
Yeah, exactly. They want to get rid of organic because organic farmers don't buy pesticides from these companies. They don't buy genetically engineered seeds. And for the most part, they're independent and they're able to make a good living.
No. Yeah, you're saying yes to that. H. E. Hey. There is no profit in organic.
Well, most of the
corporations.
Yeah, I mean, there is some, you know, some of the big corporations are finally realizing they can make a little bit of money off organic, but most of the profit is going to go to the farmers if we, you know, stick with small-scale organic agriculture.
They are trying F A fake organic on B I big M monocropping.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the problems. Organic, you know, the organic industry is growing so fast. It's $10 billion a year on organics is going to be spent in the U.S. in 2003, and all of these big food companies like Heinz and General Mills are realizing that they can make lots of money by marketing organic foods. And so that's been one of the problems, is that as organics become more popular, how do you remain true to the original ideals of, you know, preserving the environment and providing safe food, but also juggling that with making it more readily available to more people? Because obviously to have more organics out there in the supermarkets is a good thing, because most people shop at supermarkets. So it's a big issue for the organic industry.
O more S M more small, more small organic farms would take care of it.
Yeah,
exactly, exactly. I mean, we don't want to see the monocropping that we have right now just be replaced with organic monocropping. You know, that's not a good thing.
Oh, organic monocropping can not L A last.
No, you're going to have the same problems. You know, you're going to have the soil erosion, and you're still, you know, you're still exploiting the workers who are picking your food. You're still shipping it all the way across the country, and you know, contributing to global warming. So yeah, it's not a good alternative.
And you are D E P depleting the soil. Depleting the soil. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, because you have long rows of organic lettuce, you know, and so you're not taking good care of the land.
S. So, before, after 10 years, the soil is shit.
Exactly.
They're not thinking long term. The monocroppers.
Yeah, it's the same way of thinking.
S. Or they are thinking, or they are thinking long term. G, A, get rid of organic. Get people. D, dependent on M O monocropping.
Yeah.
Then when M O monocropping fails, you will need P E pesticides.
Yeah.
All over again.
Exactly.
And no A L alternatives.
Yeah. Yeah.
They are thinking long term.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is the same thing, control. You know, that's what they want.
Yes. W H I, which is P R E pretty O N, pretty OB, obvious.
Yeah.
But they always S E L sell us the obvious. They always sell us the obvious. The stuff you'd think they, how can they get away with this? It's so obvious, but they always do. S. So, why do you have A C O N NSERV conversation A V T I conservative N name. Why does your organization have a conservative name?
One of the things that we're trying to do is appeal to a broader audience of people. I think we've got, I was just up in Sacramento last weekend. There was a big protest against a conference that was being held by the U.S. government, and of course only corporations and pro-industry academics were invited to this conference. And so one of the things we were trying to do was really get the word out to more people that the issue of safe food is relevant to everyone, not just to a certain hardcore group of people. And so one of the reasons that we have a little bit more of a conservative name is we're trying to speak to a bigger audience, because issues like pesticides and safe food affect everyone. And so we want to get the word out there. We want more people to start thinking about what they eat and when they sit down for dinner every night, how that impacts the environment, how it impacts the people who have grown that food, how it impacts themselves, most importantly. So that's one of the main reasons. But if you look on our website, you can see that we're very radical, not conservative at all. So.
And the F, the C, O, P, the corporations, COPS, the cops, T, O, O, took, S, E, E, seeds, B, A, L, seed balls.
Yeah, they went to the Convergence Center. They went to the Convergence Center in Sacramento, and they found some little seed balls. Basically, it's a seed in some mud, and they confiscated it because supposedly it was a projectile, and it could have been used to harm someone.
You can K I kill someone with a seed ball.
Yeah, it's very dangerous. I mean, if you looked at and when we were there, the cops outnumbered the protesters by about 10-1. They were on every street corner with their guns, with the pepper spray and the tear gas and the rubber bullets, and they were just raring to shoot someone. But yeah, you got to be really careful with those seed balls. If they fell into the wrong hands,
How big are the seed balls?
They're about this big.
What's that about?
And I think if they actually touch...
An inch across?
Yeah. And I think if you drop them from about this height, they would crumble. So there's no way that you could do anything harmful with these seeds, although to some of these corporations, the act of planting a seed is very dangerous because you might empower yourself to grow your own food. So I think that's what they were scared of.
S. So. Why. Do. The. Corporations. Why do the C. O. The cops. T. A. Take. S. I. Sides.
Yeah, I think that's a good question. I mean, I think it's unfortunate that they take sides. I think they come under a lot of pressure from, obviously from this, from the United States government who was holding this conference. And for them, it was an opportunity to buy a bunch of new toys. So you see them out there with their new crazy-looking armored car that looks like, it could be rolling through the streets of Baghdad. And all their guns and all their tear gas canisters and their pepper spray and all the other things that they have. But I think once again they feel threatened. You know, they hear all these stories of crazy protesters coming into town and trying to destroy property and, you know, and vandalize some of the local businesses.
I with seed balls.
Well, yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, you could really do some damage to a window with one of those inch wide seed balls.
They tried to keep the CONF conference a secret.
Yeah, they did. I mean, they invited ministers from 100 different countries, and basically they wanted to just shove them all in this big exposition center and tell them how great pesticides and GMOs and food irradiation, all these other technologies that they have. So none of our organizations were invited to participate in this conference, and that's one of the reasons that we're out there on the streets protesting, because we don't have a forum to voice our opinion. We don't have any way for us to convey to the ministers that most Americans don't want to eat genetically engineered foods. Most Americans don't want corporations to be controlling our food supply.
Mexico. F-A-R. Farmers. F-O-U. Found. O-U. Found out about the conference. Mexican farmers found out about the conference. I and they S P R E spread the word. Oh, that's how the secret meeting became known, was Mexican farmers found out about it and spread the word.
Ah, interesting. I didn't know how the cat got out of the bag, but...
They did. They wanted a P... R I private they meaning the US and the people orchestrating this meeting wanted it very private where they could S T R O strong arm the ministers from the other countries.
Exactly. But it was good because the ministers saw all the people out on the streets. They saw all the thousands of riot cops, you know, and they realized that, you know, there was another side to the story. So I think we had a big impact, and I think it was a good success.
And yes.
And even the Sacramento Bee, you know, they had really good articles in the Sacramento Bee, basically letting us get our message across. And I think a lot of the journalists were concerned because they went into this meeting and they weren't allowed to go talk to whoever they wanted. They were, you know, shepherded to just certain spokespeople. So it was a good success.
Be the N E the next time they will M meet in on an island.
Exactly. That's what happened after the big WTO protests in 1999 in Seattle. The next time they had them in Qatar, which is like, you know, no freedom of speech there. No one can voice a dissenting opinion. But the next actual big meeting is going to be in Cancun, which is in September, and that's the next meeting of the WTO. So that's going to be a lot bigger than Sacramento, but the same idea. There's going to be lots of police there to make sure that you know only government representatives and industry are able to you know get into the conference.
They are. Are you running scared?
I hope so. I hope so. I think they are, though, because they're not able to silence us, and our numbers keep growing, and people are starting to get the message. I think all the various controversies that happen with, like, Enron and all these other companies, you know, fiddling with their books, defrauding millions of people out of money, you know, and in California, manipulating the power market so they can make millions of dollars. And it takes a while because I think people are conditioned to not be so skeptical. But slowly, I think they start hearing more and more of what's going on, and hopefully they'll finally get it and join us in the streets where we all should be.
Yes. How about the U.S., the United States, S-U-I-N-G, S-U-I-N-G, suing, E, oh, the EU.
Yeah.
In the E, in the W, T, O.
Yeah, what happened a couple months ago was that the U.S., they lodged a complaint against the EU because they have a moratorium on approving new varieties of genetically engineered crops, and they also have very strict labeling laws. So if you have a food product that has genetically engineered ingredients, you have to label it. And of course, the U.S. doesn't like that because it means that they can't dump their unwanted genetically engineered products on the countries in Europe. So they agreed to meet and discuss it. Those talks broke down, so now it's going to be brought in front of a formal panel at the WTO in Geneva, Switzerland. And it's basically the issue will be decided by three trade bureaucrats. But what's happened in the past is a similar thing happened with respect to growth hormones in meat. And the U.S. farmers inject a lot of their cows with growth hormones to make them go quicker. People in Europe are concerned because there's a lot of evidence that shows that eating hormone-tainted meat leads to cancer. And so what happened, they did a similar suit against the WTO with regards to growth hormones, and the WTO ruled in favor of the U.S., but what the EU said was, we don't care what the WTO ruled. We still don't want this meat. We're just going to pay the fine. So I think the same thing's going to happen with GMOs. They're just going to say, whatever you decide, you know, we're still not going to eat these foods.
Why even pay the fines?
Well, they're legally obliged to pay the fines, and it works both ways. I mean, the European Union just sued the U.S. because they had been unfairly subsidizing a lot of their producers as well. But yeah, it is ridiculous that all these countries are giving each other money, and they're not giving people, you know, freedom of choice to decide what they want to do, and they're not giving corporations or mandating that they be accountable for their actions.
It is like T.A. taking you to court, but W.I. without a J jury.
Exactly. And they say this is that, you know, the reason that Europe is opposing genetically engineered foods is because they're anti-science. Mm-hmm. And yet the issue is decided by three trade lawyers. You know, none of them are scientists. None of them are aware of what the actual issues are. They're basically trade bureaucrats whose job is to make sure that, you know, corporations have as many rights as possible.
And S-O. So what if it is a an anti S C science?
Exactly. I mean, ultimately what it comes down to, people should just have the right to decide what kind of food they want to eat.
Yes. They, it, is, like, C, O, R, corporations, saying, S, C, I, science, corporate scientists, corporate science, it's like corporate science is S A sacred.
Yeah. It's junk science. That's what we like to call it.
Did you hear what he said? Yeah. Yeah. Did we see O cover everything?
Yeah, I think pretty much. I mean, I'd just like to say anyone who's listening to tune into our website, which is www.organicconsumers.org, and we have thousands of articles up on the website on not just on GMOs, but on organics, on mad cow disease, on pesticides, on fair trade, a whole variety of different issues. So I'd encourage people to visit the website to read more about these issues. But more importantly, we have information on how you can get involved, because we're not just trying to educate people, we're trying to encourage people to take part and become active and change the food system.
How can people become involved?
Well, people can become involved, I think, by educating their friends and family and letting them know about some of these issues. In this day and age of email and technology, I think we all need to do a little bit more face-to-face interaction with our friends and family. So that's one way you can get involved. We also have corporate campaigns that we organize, and so we have a campaign against Safeway, encouraging them not to use genetically engineered foods. So we encourage people to take part in that campaign, hand out leaflets in front of their local store, call food companies, tell them you don't want to eat GMOs, and I think most importantly, vote with your knife and fork. You know, buy organic foods, visit your local farmers market, join a community supported agriculture project.
Don't. B, by, C, O, corporate, A, S, as, M, U, as much as, do not buy corporate as much as possible.
Yeah, I think we need to fight the corporations, but we also need to build an alternative. And that one of the great things about food is we have alternatives and we have, you know, choices that we can make as individuals.
B, U, by, S, small.
Buy small, buy local. Definitely.
And K, E, keep, A, S, asking, who, O, owns the C company, I, and what is in What's in the product? Who owns the company and what's in the product? B. E. Because. B. I. Big. Corporations. Have. Bought. A lot of the companies that maybe when you first started buying from that brand, it was a small company and it isn't anymore.
Exactly. For example, Odwalla, owned by Coca-Cola. Mm. It's a good one.
Can you list some more?
Yeah, I mean, Muir Glen, which makes organic tomatoes, they're owned by General Mills. Cascadian Farm is also owned by General Mills. Stonyfield Yogurt has been bought out partially by Danone. And, of course, the best example is Ben & Jerry's, which was bought out by Unilever, which is the biggest food company in the world. That happened
when did
a couple
that
years.
Happen?
Happened about 3 years ago. So we got to be careful.
Who owns WH Whole Foods?
Whole Foods isn't owned by anyone else, but they're a good example, I think, of corporate organic. They're anti-labor. They participate in union-busting activities. And they're basically a monocrop organic supermarket. Mm-hmm. So there's lots of other places people can shop.
Mm-hmm. And they... S. They are... They S-C... C, H, A, change, what is in the F, food, W, I, with, out, telling you. Oh, you mean not Whole Foods, but that's what one of the things we noticed during this past like 5 or 6 years of serious mm-hmm. transition is there's something that we would be buying for right. years, and right. then one day, and you don't think you have to check the ingredients every right. single time you buy it, and then right. one time we look at it and it's not yeah. sweetened with barley malt anymore, it's white sugar, and when
right,
did
right,
that
right,
happen?
Right. They're slipping that stuff in there yeah. slowly. Yeah.
They don't let anybody know that they're yeah. changing the ingredients. S, so, K, keep, R, E, reading the labels.
Exactly. Become informed, because that's what they don't want you to do.
Okay, Simon Harris, and give the website one more time.
It's www.organicconsumers.org.
Do we have that linked from lover.org?
I certainly hope so.
Okay. If we don't, we will. So if you go to lover.org, you'll be able to get there too. A. N. Another. N. E. I. Neighbor. Simon is another neighbor. That you're like...
I live on the same block.
The third or fourth person on this street that's been on this show.
Keep it local.
We got quite a block here. Exactly. Keep it local. Yeah. Okay. And so Susie Block will be coming up later tonight, and then on Playing with Passion... We'll play the videotape that was shot at Friday night's UC Berkeley performance. And that starts at 11:30. Susie Block is at 11. And next week is the second Peace Jam on the Shaman's Den. A big band. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. And your player... is going to stop. Hit play again for the mix.
Thank you for having me.